I just need your count. Okay, there's countdown. Coming down in 5, 4, 3. Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR 96.3, 96.3 HD2, and Sirius XM channel 141. I'm Bramante Bryant, in for Harold Fisher. This is the Insight segment. Well, the newest jobs report is out from the Department of Labor, and it shows employment increases, wages rising, but also just a slight uptick in the unemployment rate. What does all of this mean for the U.S. economy, and maybe more importantly, the average U.S. citizen? We're going to talk about that tonight, and we've got the perfect person joining us. She is Acting U.S. Secretary of Labor, Julie Sue. Secretary Sue, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really glad to be here.
You know, numbers can always be tricky, and your job is really to deal with numbers. And when I say they can be tricky in terms of helping folks understand, right, what these numbers mean in real life, what it means for the U.S. economy, what it means for interest rates. So talk to us a little bit about what the latest numbers mean in terms of how you interpret them and how you see them for the economy and for citizens. But then we'll get more specific as well.
Well, thank you so much. So let me first talk about the numbers and then what they actually mean for day-to-day folks, because the numbers don't lie, right? We have to be basing everything we do in facts. And the fact of the matter is that this economy, since President Biden came into office, we've had over 15.6 million jobs created in this country. The last month was 272,000. It just continues a trend of very steady, stable growth in the economy. And at the same time, the unemployment rate remains at historic lows. If you recall, back in 2021, most people said there's no way the unemployment rate would come down to anywhere close to 4%, certainly not as fast as it has. And instead, we have had a unemployment rate at or below 4% for 30 months straight. That's the longest stretch since the 1960s. Also, we have high labor force participation rate. That just means that people are in the job market. They're looking for jobs and they're finding them. And the real wages for workers is up. It's up higher than the rate of inflation, which means that working people have more money in their pockets, a little bit more of what the president calls breathing room. What this means is that there are more opportunities, over 15 million people in jobs that were not in jobs when President Biden came into office. That's, you know, over 15 million people who are making a living, who are contributing to their communities, who get home at the end of the day, you know, close their door, put their keys, on the table, and are able to know that there's a sense of security. And that is fundamental to President Biden's vision for this country, is that everybody who wants a good job can get one, and they can contribute, and they can make a living wage, and they can, you know, go to the doctor when they need to because they have health benefits, and they feel a sense of real security.
So, Secretary Sue, for the average citizen trying to kind of feel that, right? A lot of conversation is, okay, this is a pretty good jobs report. You know, how are folks feeling this? How are folks feeling in terms of in their pockets? So let's go a little bit kind of with break it down to some specific segments of our society. In terms of the numbers for African Americans, where do you see those and how does the administration feel about those numbers?
So the president has also been very clear that we cannot do right in this country if we don't do right by everybody. And he talks about building an economy from the middle out and the bottom up. And in order to do that, we have to be clear about who's been at the bottom for far too long. And the reality is that there are tremendous inequities, especially for Black workers in this country. Everything from wages to wealth, to opportunity. Sometimes that, you know, lack of opportunity is because of just, you know, straight up discrimination. Sometimes it's because the systems that we have not been built to provide equal opportunity for all. And so we are focused on making sure that we reverse all of those, right? That we change that narrative, that we build a true equity in our economy. And so, for example, we are seeing the There's always been a gap between the unemployment rate. The unemployment rate for Black community folks have always been much higher than those for whites. But under President Biden, they have been steadily closing. And now that gap is the lowest that it has been in a very, very long time. That tells us that when we are intentional about equity, when we are intentional about reaching into communities that have been left out in the past, we can turn things around. Now, part of that is because the president's Investing in America agenda is about making sure that we fix roads and bridges, that we ensure that every family that turns on the faucet has clean drinking water, that we make sure that every community has access to high-speed, reliable internet. All of those things that we are building are also creating good jobs in communities across the country. And at the Department of Labor, one of our top priorities is to ensure that those are good jobs and that everybody has access to those jobs.
And to your point about that difference in the unemployment rate for African Americans and other communities, just to dive into those numbers to give folks some perspective, the report shows that unemployment rates for adult men, 3.8%, adult women, 3.4%, teenagers overall, 12.3%, for white Americans, 3.5%, Asian Americans, 3.1%, but for Black Americans, 6.1%. So to your point, within those subgroups other than teenagers, for African Americans, those numbers tend to be double, though, as you mentioned, they are lower, but that unemployment still seems to hit African Americans harder continually. Is there, Secretary Sue, is there a you've kind of hit some of the reasons for that. Most of that would be systemic. Would that be your sense of what you're fighting to get those numbers that are more equitable in terms of being in the same place as others?
Yeah, it's definitely systemic. It's it's longstanding, right? We are trying in this moment to reverse really decades, if not centuries, of very deep-seated inequality. And when President Biden came to office on day one, he issued an executive order that basically said, we are going to throw the full weight of the federal government behind combating systemic racism and making sure that we are looking at barriers that have been put in place, including by government itself, right? How do we make sure that we are removing barriers and creating real opportunity? And I talk about this in terms of infrastructure. So, roads and bridges are infrastructure, right? The president has unleashed a infrastructure decade. To me, we need to make sure that we are connecting people to jobs. And that is a different kind of infrastructure, but it's also infrastructure. It's the roads and bridges that connect people to the good jobs they want to need and employers to the people they want to need. I call that our opportunity infrastructure. And that has to be as strong as our physical infrastructure. But like roads and bridges, in our communities, our opportunity infrastructure has some potholes. It's got some cracks in it. Some people pay toll roads while others don't, right? There's all kinds of metaphors around this. But the bottom line is that for too long, the message has been sent to the Black community, but to all communities, that the reason why some people don't get jobs is just because they lack skills. I don't believe it. The reason is because we've not built an opportunity infrastructure that truly reaches all communities. And that's what we are very focused on doing. So for example, what am I talking about? Apprenticeship programs. Apprenticeship programs are like super highways on the opportunity infrastructure, right? It is connected to a real job. It is learning a skill and being paid while you learn. And it's got a good job with, an average of about $80,000 a year pay at the end of it, including for individuals who don't have a college degree. And since President Biden came to office, we've had over 90,000 African Americans in apprenticeship programs. That's a tremendous growth. And we are trying to make sure that, we have cohorts that are really focused on, you can't be it if you don't see it, right? So focused on having mentoring opportunities. We are investing in programs, including like trades women-led organizations, Black women leading opportunities for other Black women to get into the trades. Those are all intentional things that we are doing to try to reverse this longstanding, these longstanding inequities. And when I travel the country, I get to see what that means, whether it's going to HBCUs to talk about the real opportunity that's out there, right? I've been to, you know, Jackson State in Mississippi. I was in Tennessee State, right? The largest in that state, to smaller ones like Benedict College in South Carolina, talking to HBCUs about their part in this, but also, you know, seeing people actually in jobs that they didn't even know existed before, that they didn't think were open to them. That's the kind of opportunity infrastructure that we need to create.
Let's talk a little bit about, and again, you know, that sound, it sounds like you got boots on the ground and doing these tours and sort of meeting people where they are. In terms of numbers, can you help us understand where in the latest report, I think we had in the May report, an increase of about 270,000 jobs. That's about right? 272.
Yep.
But yet the unemployment rate, and when I say ticked up, I mean just very, very, very little bit, from 3.9 to 4%. How is it, I'm not great at math, but how is it that you have employment rising and unemployment rising at the same time? More jobs, but unemployment rising just a bit. How does that work?
Yeah, that's right. So sometimes the rise in unemployment is caused by more people coming into the labor market, right? So that means you have more jobs and more people doing them, but you have also have more people looking for jobs. Sometimes that's the reason. I will say that part of the issue we have to pay attention to, as you noted, right, the 6.1% unemployment rate for the Black community. We have to pay attention also to job quality, kind of like the channeling of certain communities to certain jobs. And we have to pay attention to the systemic issues that keep some communities, in more entrenched poverty. One of the things that we work on in the Department of Labor is also making sure that labor laws are enforced. And, you know, there's a federal minimum wage, and there's about 30 states that have higher than the federal minimum wage, right? So workers are entitled to more than $7.25 an hour. But there are about 20 where the it's at the federal minimum wage. And the majority of those are in the southeast part of the country. So wages tend to be lower in areas where there are higher concentrations of Black workers. That's not by accident, right? That's part of the systemic inequity that we're talking about. And so for the Department of Labor, we're really trying to focus our resources on places where we have to disrupt inequity more. And again, we see that when we do that, it makes a difference. So I recently was in North Carolina, and I spoke at the Urban League of the Central Carolinas graduation. It was their largest graduating class, so 102 graduates, learning skills that they're going to need to help participate in this infrastructure decade, learning about HVAC, right? Learning how to do electric work. And when we invest in and focus on programs that reach certain communities, and then make sure that once folks get the skills, they actually can get into the jobs, it makes a really big difference. And that is, you know, we can't skip over the steps of how we, disrupt inequity. The other thing you asked earlier, right, is this systemic? So occupational segregation is a real thing, right? This is where some communities are, disproportionately working in jobs that have low wages, that don't have benefits, that have health and safety risks in them. And we have, unfortunate studies, but you can't solve what you don't know, right? So we want to have the data that shows that occupational segregation is extremely costly, especially to the Black community, right? We're talking about tens of billions of dollars a year of lost wages because of being channeled into jobs that don't have the same quality as others. But to know the problem is, a step in how we work to solve it. And so that's why so many of our investments are about making sure that real opportunity is available to all communities, especially in this moment when the president's investments are resulting in tremendous job growth. It's not enough to build good jobs. We also have to build the roads and bridges so everybody can get those jobs.
Secretary Sue, we're going to dive more into these numbers and what they mean. In terms of what it means for the interest rates, what it means in terms of how immigration is tied to this. You mentioned about women. They're some of the strongest in terms of their numbers of employment. So we want to talk about that, but we're going to take a quick break. Don't forget, you can hear every edition of the Daily Drum Insight segment via podcast on WHUR.com, or you can download the 96.3 HD2 app on your smartphone and hear the program live in its entirety. This conversation continues online and on SiriusXM channel 141 and 96.3 HD2. The original Quiet Storm is next on 96.3 WHUR. Welcome back to the Daily Drum on SiriusXM channel 141 and 96.3 HD2. I'm Bramante Bryant in for Harold Fisher. Tonight we're talking about the latest jobs report, and we are speaking with a person who is an expert on it. She's the acting U.S. Secretary of Labor, Julie Hsu. Secretary Hsu, I'm sorry. Again, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much.
Let's go back to some of the numbers. I wanted to talk to you about foreign-born workers. The report is showing that they have taken up the largest share of job gains in workforce growth. Is that the case?
No. So there's no question that immigrant workers, as has been true throughout the nation's history, have helped to power the economic recovery that we've had and to power the job gains that we've had. But the vast majority of the jobs that have been created, the 15.6 million or so jobs, have gone to native-born workers. And I think the point here is...
Let me be sure that I'm correct. Maybe I didn't phrase the question correctly. Has that group, though, seen the largest gain in workforce growth? Maybe not overall in the whole report, but in specific groups, they've had the largest gain. Would that be a more accurate statement?
I think the way to think about it may be that they've had more growth in the last few years, in part because part of the impact of COVID was just less immigration, period, right? Less movement. And so since part of the recovery has been that, yes, our rates of immigration have returned to pre-pandemic levels. And so that growth, the comparison to where we were back in 2021, that growth has returned due to factors that were true because of what the pandemic caused in the economy. So I think it's right to say that immigrant workers have recovered to rates that they were at before the pandemic now.
I guess where I was going with that also was, I know the president has initiated a new executive order that's a little stronger along the border. And I was wondering if that new policy would affect that job growth or the situation with foreign-born workers sort of coming into the country. Does that have any correlation at all with his executive action?
We don't expect it to impact either the labor market or the growth in jobs. What we're seeing now is, as jobs improve, I mentioned earlier, right, that real wages are up. Many of the jobs are being created right now as part of the president's Investing in America agenda, where we are, again, focused on infrastructure, focused on bringing manufacturing home, right? Building everything, making everything from semiconductor chips to face masks, right? Things that that this country needs, electric vehicles to electric vehicle batteries, and also clean energy, right? Jobs and clean energy. Those are all creating jobs with higher wages and the opportunity for workers to organize and join a union. So when we see that happen, more people come into the labor market. So we don't expect that the executive order is going to affect that. What we're doing is, these investments are what's driving the job growth in ways that we have not seen in a very, very long time. And we expect, more of those investments to keep on hitting communities, hitting the ground in the months to come.
It's hard to really, disconnect these reports from so many other things that are going on economically in the country, right? Housing market for sellers, this is a hot market, but the interest rates are high. So for those who are buying, it's a little tougher. There's not as much out on the market. But because there is job growth, right, usually means then the interest rates, the Fed is not going to lower those rates. So I would think for the administration, that's kind of a tough dance here, that you've got this great jobs report, right? Many thought that those numbers would go down, but they actually had increased. But yet those interest rates now, the Federal Reserve is going to be more hesitant of dropping the interest rates. And I know that's sort of not your spot, but it still sort of works around in your area. What do you do about that? How do you sell that to the public when they hear, okay, Secretary Sue, wages are up. Okay, that's good. But I want to get a new house and interest rates are up too. So yeah. And inflation is still kind of ticking up. Well, how do we make all of that work? And can it all work at once?
Yeah, I mean,
that's a tough question. I know I gave you a lot.
But it's an important one, because you are right to say, let's talk about the things that affect people day to day, right? These big numbers don't mean much if people don't feel better in their day-to-day lives. And the cost of food is part of the problem. Now, when I talk about, you know, real wages are up, it's because the cost of things are one part of the equation, but what people make is another part of it, right? And that's why this president, his focus on good jobs, his focus on working people really doing well is so important. But we also have to focus on tackling prices. There's no question about it. That's why, and housing, right, is probably the biggest challenge. You know, I see that everywhere I go too. You know, working people, they're making more, they're winning more at the bargaining table, right? They're getting more benefits and the like, but they still can't often afford to live near where they work. That is a real problem. That's why the president has some policies around that, right? Like helping to support first-time home buyers, for example, right? Increasing the supply of housing. A lot of these are things that will not happen overnight, but they're really important, and we need to continue to work on them. He's also really focused on bringing down costs in other ways, right? Capping the cost of insulin to $35 a month, helping to control the cost of healthcare. These are real costs that working families have to face that make people, again, like not feel secure. And so we've got to keep on fighting that battle. Now, the other part of it, though, is there's nothing inevitable about inflation. So it does make sense to look at corporate behavior, right? Companies who, you know, we're trying to tackle corporate consolidation, because one thing that you also see is, you know, when you have massive corporations that have full control, they can raise prices just to, you know, increase their profits. And that's not good for working people or for, you know, ordinary Americans either. So the battle to make sure that we are, you know, combating corporate consolidation and monopoly behavior is another part of the puzzle. I think the point here is that we all understand, the president understands, and so do I, and everyone in the Biden-Harris administration, that we can't just do one thing, right? We've got to improve quality of life and make sure that the American people feel more secure, feel like they can contribute in the communities, and feel like there's, you know, that their government has their back through a whole, you know, holistic approach to things that we are, you know, we're all in on doing. And we've seen very positive results from that just in the last 3 years. You remember where we were 3 years ago, right? In January of 2021, COVID was out of control. There was no national strategy to address it. Unemployment was really high. People didn't know if they could go to the store and find toilet paper. We are now in a different moment, and that was not by accident. It was not inevitable. It's because leadership matters, good, solid, calm experience matters. And we've got to continue to do this work to address the very important things that you've raised.
Well, you're definitely lauding President Biden and what he has tried to do. What a lot of folks try to do in terms of work, and you mentioned this about jobs, is, you know, especially maybe single people, if you don't have families, a little easier, that you will move to the job. Wherever the jobs are, you will go. So, Secretary Sue, where would you say are the hot spots right now in the country in terms of jobs? That's number one. And part two, what are the hot job sectors right now in terms of where you see the numbers really doing well? Yeah.
So this is another good news story, which is that the growth that we have seen including just in last month's jobs report, but overall is broad-based. It's not driven by one sector, right? One industry. This last month, it was healthcare. It was construction. It was professional and business services. There was, you know, government and local government, right? Local government has been growing steadily, which is the, you know, return of people who do the day-to-day things that help to make communities better, right? Fixing potholes, right? Like making sure that your streets are clear. Local law enforcement, teachers, and the like. And so we're seeing growth across the board, and we're seeing them across many communities. So, you know, this summer I just launched a Good Job Summer Tour. I launched in Arizona, where Phoenix and Tempe signed on to our good jobs principles. And that's the idea, again, that we don't just want jobs, we want good jobs. They're going to allow an individual to support his family, that's going to allow a single mom to live a decent life, that is going to be available to someone who was impacted by the justice system. We're really focusing on good jobs. Tomorrow I'm going to Birmingham, Alabama to also talk about good jobs. So they're happening, it's happening all around the country, which is deliberate in the Investing in America agenda. But I know there are people who are still, you know, looking for jobs, looking for that on-ramp, right, to their good job. And so that's why we are still so focused on getting cities and getting states and getting employers to the table to look at how you build an opportunity infrastructure, how you focus on the good jobs and make sure that everybody can get one. We've got more work to do on that, that's for sure. But the growth that we're seeing is very much broad-based.
Well, you know, there are many folks out there who are looking for work, right? And have been continually looking for work and have been unemployed, you know, for long stretches. Are there specific programs, Secretary Sue, or are there things being done? And I know you kind of maybe hit on some of them, to support those individuals who have been struggling to re-enter the workforce. And I know you talked a little bit also, you mentioned those who are coming out of prison looking for work, and I'm sure that falls in that category. Can you talk a little bit about just those who are trying to re-enter the workforce, who've had long-term unemployment?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, long-term unemployment can be devastating, right? For obvious reasons. It's obviously, you know, extremely, it's financially devastating. It also, you know, people start to lose faith in the system, or they feel like, you know, they don't have the right the right skills, the right abilities for what's in their communities. And so we are definitely focused on taking those who are most vulnerable and should they have opportunity now. That includes investing in, I mentioned, apprenticeship programs. It's also pre-apprenticeship programs, right? Some folks are going to need to gain some of the skills before they can get into an apprenticeship program. And that's why we are also investing in pre-apprenticeship that maybe, you know, involves community college programs. But the whole point is that all of these programs have to be connected to an actual job, right? A good program doesn't give someone skills that they might need for a job that might materialize. A good program is connected to a real job that's coming. And that's why starting with the jobs report and talking about the number of good jobs is so important. And now we have to, you know, we have to make sure that everything else is connected to making that happen. But when it does, it's like magic. You know, I again, like, you know, go around to different communities and meet single moms, one who learned about an apprenticeship program in the trades when she was at the welfare office about to apply for welfare for her and her children. She saw an advertisement for a program that was directed to women, and she said, let me try that. She said when she got that program, she didn't even know what a wrench was, but now she is working in a job that is paying her four times what she ever made before that, and she's never looked back. We're seeing people who are, you know, building the new bridge in their community, helping with the airport modernization, operating engineers, you know, working on cranes that they didn't know. And part of the issue is that you can't do a job that you don't know exists. And you can't get to a job if you don't have other adequate supports, right? Transportation, childcare. So all of those are parts of the investments that we are making to ensure that everybody can get their piece of the American dream as we grow jobs in this country.
You know, a little bit of what you're talking about, it just reminds me, it sounds like we're going back not quite a century ago, but the early 1930s, those work progress administration programs, when you're talking about infrastructure and giving folks jobs to help rebuild things of that nature. Is there any concern, Secretary Sue, of, I know for a while, at least years back, you know, there was always talk, hey, you know, buy American, let's not have jobs go overseas. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Is that still a concern? Does that have any effect on the jobs report numbers? Where do jobs going overseas fit in this equation? Or is that kind of a really non-issue now?
No, that is a very big issue. And I'm glad you said that, because like I, you know, I said, we have to think about all the pieces of the puzzle, right? We can't just address one part of it. And definitely making things in America is fundamental to the president's vision for America. That's why we're investing, right? That's why he says all the time, you know, there are things that we invented that we no longer make in this country. There's no reason why that's the case, other than decades of policies that have not supported, domestic manufacturing. So we have to be able to make things here, and we have to be able to make sure that good jobs are here. We also saw during the pandemic that we have to do that because supply chain issues were a problem, right? We couldn't get, I mentioned earlier, face mask, right? Personal protective equipment. We couldn't get basic supplies because for so long, we have not had an industrial policy that made things in the United States. Well, President Biden has turned that around too. So that's very important. The other part of that is making sure that we have a fair competition, right? Through trade policies. The president recently announced, you know, tariffs on goods coming from China. Now we have to do that to help support a U.S. industry and their ability to build up. So that is very, very important. And it's really important that you asked about it. And all of these pieces are part of an overall puzzle for how we create an economy in which working people have real opportunity, in which the jobs are good jobs, and in which, you know, America is strong because we're making things here ourselves. So it is a very important part of the overall puzzle.
Speaking of good jobs, here we are in the Washington, D.C. metropolitan area. I grew up in this area. I'm sure a lot of our listeners have too. And you always heard that term, you know, get yourself a good government job, you know, and if you do that, you are set. Can we still say a government job is a good job? And when you go on your tours, is that part of the touting of the workforce and creating jobs, where the federal government is a place that you're encouraging folks where there are opportunities, or even state governments?
Is that such a thing,
a good government job?
I love that question. So yes, right? Government jobs tend to be union jobs. So that means that they have, it's stable wages, it's health benefits, it's retirement security, right? Things that we want all Americans to have, but many jobs still do not. So yes to that. The other thing is that, you know, when I came into the Department of Labor, we had a big task ahead of us to rebuild the department because of the devastating cuts inflicted by the last administration. So there were, investigators who make sure that every worker gets a just day's pay that we needed to hire because there had been cuts in the last administration. Investigators who go out to make sure that every workplace is healthy and safe, we had to hire because there were cuts in the last administration. And so we have been in a period of rebuilding the federal government, and also in ways that make sure that it looks like America, right? This is a matter of, you know, what we look like internally helps us to serve effectively all communities externally, but it's also about the credibility of government, right? The more it looks like the communities that we seek to serve, the more credible we are. So those are still good jobs. We have hired. We've also, you know, expanded our reach. So for example, we have enforcement investigators in the Mississippi Delta for the first time in the history of the Department of Labor. That's really important too. So that's about, you know, expanding our capacity, again, in places where there are vulnerable workers. I want to say, you know, I love, you mentioned, you know, the 1930s, right? And the programs of that time. I would say, you know, President Biden has a portrait of President Franklin D. Roosevelt in the Oval Office. He takes that president as the inspiration, and FDR, as you already, you know, alluded to, right, was the president that put in place the New Deal, that put in place. He really believed that if you do right by working people, you build a stronger democracy, and that is what President Biden believes. And so, you know, programs back then that were radical for their time, right, a 40-hour work week, a national minimum wage, became mainstream because of real leadership, because of an idea that, you know, we have to pay attention to the well-being of working people and of working families. And so that's the model of what we're trying to do here. So I love that you said a lot of things that we're talking about kind of remind you of that era, because we are very, you know, we know what we need to do. We just have to have the political will and the focus to get those things done. And we know we haven't done all the work that needs to be done, but we are on the right path, and we got to keep it up.
Yeah, and some of the unfortunate, you know, few hiccups of that New Deal was it often did not cover in terms of Social Security and health benefits for farm workers historically, even though we know the preponderance of the New Deal was very effective. But you had mentioned about in terms of folks wanting jobs, right, where there is security, there is retirement. I would have to think that in your position, when you're trying to encourage private industry to offer that to those workers, that's got to be one of the toughest hills to climb, especially when you're dealing with small businesses where their, you know, margins are so small, and many of them may not be able to afford to give right health insurance and retirement and benefits. Is that something that the Department of Labor has to work with, or is that where you just have to encourage private industry to do that, and there's not a whole lot that you can do, your department?
Right. No, that is very important. So I would say about that, one, you know, we are in a tight labor market right now, right? That's the whole, you know, we started this conversation with the low levels of unemployment. And that means that workers have more choice. And one of the results of that has been that in order for employers to recruit the workforce they need, to retain the workers, both because you want a steady workforce and because it's costly, right, to have turnover, employers have had to improve job quality, right? There've been increases to wages. There's been other things to attract workers. And so that has had the effect of improving some working conditions. The other part of this, and this is more systemic, is that the president believes, and this has proven to be true, that if the federal government invests in a strategic and impactful way, and the investments under the president's Investing in America agenda are almost $2 trillion, so we are talking about real impact, that when you do that, you can also get private industry to crowd in their investments. So if we say, you know, for example, that we're going to invest in clean energy, we've seen companies come in to the tune of billions and billions of dollars to build out, hydrogen hubs, to build out, you know, to invest in making these, you know, solar panels here in the United States. So that's another way that if we're smart about how government works, you can impact the industry more broadly. But there are definitely struggles for small businesses. Now, I'll also say we have an incredible Small Business Administration led by our Small Business Administrator, Isabel Guzman, and we've seen more small business applications since President Biden came into office also than at any other time. I think last I heard it was like 18 million. I think I'm sure it's gone up since then.
The Department of Labor, you all are doing something in conjunction with Pride Month, which is in June, and Juneteenth will be celebrating here in the next couple of weeks. Where is the Labor Department? How are you involved with Pride Month and Juneteenth?
Well, yeah, happy June. Those are, important, celebrations, really, but also acknowledgments of who has been left out and the work that we have to do. So, I recently raised the Pride flag outside of the Department of Labor. We are here on Constitution Avenue, right in front of the Capitol. So, some 32 million tourists come through D.C. a year. And, it's important for people to see our values, to see where we stand, and to have a real approach to inclusion and real equity, right? I often I said this when I did it, but I think it's we don't want to just talk about acceptance. We want to talk about real celebration and inclusion of our diverse communities. And we know that the LGBTQ community also has particular challenges that they faced in the workplace. Everything from discrimination, not being hired, not being promoted, to outright harassment, and really hostile working conditions. So we've got work to do on that front, and we're committed to doing it. And then Juneteenth, we'll be raising the Juneteenth flag also, a recognition that for Black Americans in this country, we continue to face the legacy of slavery, of Jim Crow, of discrimination, of exclusion, and we cannot build the country that we should if we don't address those things. And that's not just a matter of, sort of charity, right? It's not a matter of doing it because we want to help Black people. It's a matter of making the country better, right? I say this all the time, why we do it because, diversity is excellence, right? When you look for true excellence, you are going to build diverse workplaces, diverse communities, diversity of opportunity. And so this Juneteenth, we celebrate true diversity. We celebrate Black excellence. The White House will be doing that as well. And we also acknowledge how much work there is left to do. That was your point about, the New Deal. We want to take the good lessons of what's been done, but also make sure that this time around, everybody gets a fair shot.
We have a couple of minutes left, Secretary Sue, and I did want to ask you, what's your sense of the role of unions today? There's a lot of debate on whether or not their value is still at a level that it once was. What's the department's view where labor fits into this job market situation and employment and wages and all?
So unions have been an incredibly important force throughout this nation's history to increase working conditions, to create pathways to the middle class. You'll hear the president say all the time, Wall Street didn't build America, the middle class built America, and unions built the middle class. And, because we've talked so much about racial equity here, unions are also a very powerful force for combating racial inequities, right? Racial wage inequities. For us, we are really seeing a moment in this country where unions are, one, more popular they've been in our lifetime. I think that's not by accident, right? That is both because workers, especially coming out of the pandemic, felt like, look, people call us essential, and now we want to be treated as essential, right? We want to be valued. We want a share of the profits that we're creating, but also because President Biden has been clear that he is the most pro-worker, pro-union president that we've had. So we're seeing real gains that unions are making from hospitality to healthcare to Hollywood, from auto workers to delivery drivers to dock workers, teachers, flight attendants, all are demanding their fair share. And that is also a part of creating a more equitable economy. And so we, you know, support, and it's not just, you know, raising wages and improving benefits. We're also seeing workers in parts of the country and in industries where there was difficulty organizing in the past, actually win organizing drives now, right? So, you know, in Chattanooga, Tennessee, you know, in Alabama, in Georgia. And so I think those are going to be important parts of how we create a stronger, stronger America and communities that get to share in real economic security.
Our guest tonight has been Acting U.S. Secretary of Labor, Julie Hsu. Secretary Hsu, thank you so much for being with us. We appreciate your knowledge, your expertise, your diving into the numbers, expanding out on those numbers, and giving context to them. It's been very appreciative and very informative, and thank you so much for your time tonight.
It was so great talking to you. Thank you for the excellent questions and comments. I enjoyed our conversation.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. That's the Daily Drum for this Monday, June 10th. I'm Bramante Bryant in for Harold Fisher. Have a great night. All right, Secretary Hsu, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Answered every question. You didn't miss a beat. Not too many ums. So you know what's
such important, you know, important topics. I almost forgot we were recording something. So I really appreciate you. Yeah. No.